Welcome to the New Life Podcast, a ministry of New Life Presbyterian Church in Ithaca, New York. Join us for worship each week at 10 o'clock at 950 Danby Road, Ithaca, New York. You can also visit us on our website, www.newlifeithaca.org.
Welcome to this bonus episode of the New Life Podcast. This is the continuation of Lesson 2 from Theology 100 of our New Life University Christian Education curriculum. Lesson 2 was on the development of the canon and why we can trust the Bible that we hold in our hands. I was not able to conclude all the slides in that lesson, and there was one of the questions that came up that was regarding the Apocrypha and how we should think of it. So that's what we're going to talk about today. What is the Apocrypha and how should we think about it? Well, first of all, the term Apocrypha refers to several different kinds of texts. Within the term Apocrypha is usually used to refer to a group of books called the deuterocanonical books. But Apocrypha can also refer to certain works of the apostolic fathers. It can also refer to a class of texts that we call pseudepigrapha. And it can also refer to texts called legends. We're going to go through all four of these types of books and talk about what is the nature of them and how we should think about them. The first thing I want to do is to mention Athanasius's Easter letter of 367. We already mentioned that letter in the main part of Lesson 2, the regular lesson that we had live. That significance of Athanasius's Easter letter is that in the year 367, it is the first full articulation of the New Testament canon. After that date, the canon is not in question. We call that a terminus ad quid. There's more to that letter, though, than just the listing of the books of the New Testament. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. In that letter, I'm just going to go through the letter with you. We find several different classifications of texts. Now, I'm going to put a link in the show notes, but it will be to the Christian Classics Ethereal Library, which is a collection of open source texts, largely from the works of Philip Schaff. This contains an excerpt from Athanasius's letter 39 in the year 367. It does not contain the whole thing. But the part that we're interested in is where Athanasius talks about which books are in the Bible and which works aren't, and how we should think about them. Remember, Athanasius was the bishop, Archbishop of Alexandria, and he was considered to be the preeminent defender of Nicene Orthodoxy. It's one of the reasons why Nicene Trinitarian Orthodoxy won out in the Christian church. So let's go through this letter. First, Athanasius begins talking about heretical books, and this is the reason why he's discussing this at all. He says, they have fabricated books which they call books of tables, in which they show stars, which they give the name of saints, and therein of a truth they have inflicted on themselves a double reproach. Those who have written such books, because they have perfected themselves in a lying and contemptible science, and as to the ignorant and simple, they have led them astray by evil thoughts concerning the right faith established in all truth in the upright presence of God. So he begins by mentioning the existence of made-up books, heretical books. We would class these books in with what are called pseudepigrapha, which is a false, a letter that is, or a gospel, or another kind of book that is written under the name of an apostle, but which is a false attribution. Eusebius of Caesarea describes this class of books as the forgeries of heretics. Athanasius agrees. So, he continues. But since we have made mention of heretics as dead, but of ourselves as possessing divine scriptures for salvation, he quotes a little bit from the Apostle Paul. He says, some few of the simple should be beguiled from their simplicity and purity by the subtlety of certain men, and should henceforth read other books, these called apocryphal, led astray by the similarity of their names with the true books. Now, he uses the word apocrypha here differently than how we use it technically today. We would substitute for the word apocrypha the term pseudepigrapha, forgeries. He says they have similarity of names and they fool simple people. He continues, I beseech you to bear patiently. If I also write by way of remembrance of matters with which you are acquainted, influenced by a need and advantage of the church. In other words, he's going to tell us what the true divinely inspired scriptures are, and he's going to list them out, and he's asking for our patience as he does this. In proceeding to make mention of these things, he continues, I shall adopt to commend my undertaking the pattern of Luke the Evangelist. For as much as some have taken hand to reduce in order for themselves the books termed apocryphal and to mix them up with divinely inspired scripture, concerning which we have been fully persuaded, as they who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word delivered to the fathers, it seemed good to me also, having been urged thereto by true brethren, and having learned from the beginning, to set before you the books included in the canon, and handed down, and accredited as divine, to the end that anyone who has fallen into error may condemn those who have led him astray, and that he who has continued steadfast in purity may again rejoice, having these things brought to his remembrance. What he's doing there is he's using the beginning of the Gospel of Luke, in which Luke talks about how he constructed his gospel as a sort of a rhetorical entree into the subject of talking about the false writings, the heretical writings. It's a little clever. So then he goes on to list the books of the Old Testament. And he does it, list them out. He says there are 22 books in number. Now, don't be thrown off by the 22. We know that there are many more than 22 books in the Old Testament, but this is the Hebrew numbering of the books, and you'll see why. There are certain collections of books that are considered one book, and when I read out this description, you'll see why he mentions 22. People think that 22 is the number of books delineated in the Old Testament because that's how many letters there are in the Hebrew alphabet. He said, For as I have heard, it is handed down that this is the number of letters among the Hebrews. There, he says it. So I should have just kept reading. Their respective order and names being as follows. The first, Genesis. Second, Exodus. Next, Leviticus. After that, Numbers. Then, Deuteronomy. Those are the first five books of the Bible we call the Pentateuch. He continues. Following this, there is Joshua, the son of Nun. Then Judges, then Ruth, and again after these four books of Kings, the first and second book being rendered as one, and likewise the third and fourth as one. So the first and second book of Kings is what we call First and Second Samuel. He says that's one book according to the numbering that gets you to 22 books. And then First and Second Kings, which he calls Third and Fourth Kings, would be one book. And again, the first and second of the Chronicles reckoned as one book. Again, Ezra, first and second, one book. That's Ezra and Nehemiah, what we call Nehemiah. After this, there's the book of Psalms, then Proverbs, next Ecclesiastes, the Song of Psalms, Job, and then the prophets. Now, here's where we make up some ground here. He says, the 12 being reckoned as one book. And this is true in the Hebrew Bible. The 12 are what we refer to as the minor prophets. They are called minor, not because they're less important, but because they're shorter than the major prophets. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, much longer books, many different prophecies. But the minor prophets are called the Book of the 12, and they are rendered as one book. So we get rid of 12 books with one swipe there. He doesn't list them out by name, but we know what they are. He says, then Isaiah, one book. Jeremiah, with Baruch, Lamentations, and the Epistle. Now, these are the only two books he mentions within the canon of Scripture that we wouldn't consider to be canonical. Baruch and the Epistle of Jeremiah. These are not included in the Hebrew text, the Masoretic text. They are only found in the Greek text, what we call the Septuagint. It's not a big deal that he includes them, but that's really the only difference between the canon he lists and the one we have. So, Jeremiah with Baruch, Lamentations, and the Epistle. Now, we do have Lamentations in our canon. He says, as one book. Afterwards, Ezekiel, Daniel, each one book, thus constitutes the Old Testament. And as I said, that's the Old Testament as we currently delineate it, except for the addition of Baruch and the Epistle of Jeremiah. He continues. Again, it is not tedious to speak of the books of the New Testament. These are the four Gospels, according to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Afterward, the Acts of the Apostles and the epistles called Catholic. Now, they're called Catholic epistles not because they're Roman Catholic, but because they were not written to a particular church, but to the whole church, the church universal. There are seven Catholic epistles of James 1, of Peter 2, of John 3, after these, one of Jude. That's all the ones we have in our Bible. In addition, there are 14 epistles of Paul. He includes Hebrews in this, which we talked about in the main lesson, that most of history thought that Paul wrote Hebrews. And again, two to Timothy, one to Titus, and lastly, that to Philemon. Oh, sorry, I skipped a couple lines. He does list out the letters of Paul. He says, the first to the Romans, then two to the Corinthians, after these to the Galatians, next to the Ephesians, the Philippians, to the Colossians, after these two to the Thessalonians, and that to the Hebrews, and then again two to Timothy, one to Titus, and lastly that to Philemon, and besides the revelation of John. That's our entire New Testament, without any extra books or books not mentioned. He says, of the Old and New Testament, these are the foundations of these are the fountains of salvation, that they who thirst may be satisfied with the living words they contain. In these alone is proclaimed the doctrine of godliness. Now notice, he has not included what we typically call the Apocrypha in these, what he's saying. These books of the Old and New Testament alone are proclaimed the doctrine of godliness. Let no man add to these, neither let him take from these. For concerning these, the Lord put to shame the Sadducees and said, ye do err, not knowing the Scriptures. And he reproved the Jews, saying, search the Scriptures, for these are they that testify of me. So, it's important to note that Athanasius mentions the entirety of the Bible, and again, with the additions of Baruch and the Epistle, and says these are the only books which are divinely inspired and able to give us life. Then he goes on. But for greater exactness, I add this also, writing of necessity, that there are other books, besides these not indeed included in the canon, but appointed by the fathers to be read by those who newly join us and who wish for instruction in the word of godliness. These are the books which I'm about to read, which we're going to call, which are typically called deuterocanonical books. And then he also mentions some of the apostolic fathers. He says, the wisdom of Solomon, the wisdom of Sirach, Esther and Judith, and Tobit, and that which is called the teaching of the apostles, that's what I've described to you, is named the Didache, and the shepherd, that's what we now call the shepherd of Hermas. But the former, my brethren, are included in the canon, the latter being merely read. Nor is there in any place a mention of apocryphal writings. Again, he's using apocryphal in terms of the pseudepigraphal forgeries of heretics. So the distinction here that Athanasius makes is that these books, what we would call deuterocanonical, and I'll explain what that is in a minute, and the apostolic fathers, these are good books to read, but they are not divinely inspired parts of the canon of Scripture. And that's the distinction the church has always held from the very beginning. And that's the distinction that Jerome made when he translated the Latin Vulgate. Athanasius concludes, of the apocryphal writings, again, that's the pseudepigrapha, the inventions of heretics. He says, they are an invention of heretics who write them when they choose, bestowing upon them their approbation and assigning them a date so that using them as ancient writings, they may find occasion to lead astray the simple. So Athanasius is very clear about what's in the Bible and what's not, and what is the status of deuterocanonical books versus what we call the pseudepigrapha. So let's go into a discussion of these different categories that I've laid out for you. First, we have the deuterocanonical books. These are the books that Athanasius and Eusebius described as good to read, but not canonical. That was the opinion of all the ancient fathers, and has been the opinion of the church as well. These are historical books. They're authentic, in other words, written in time, during the intertestamental period. That's the period between the Old and New Testament. They're written in Greek, and they're included in the Septuagint. They are not heretical, but they also are not inspired scripture, as Athanasius was just saying. What are these books? If you have a copy of the Bible, it includes the Apocrypha. And again, sorry for the terminology. Athanasius was using the word Apocrypha to describe heretical books, but that's not typically how we use the term. When people refer to Apocrypha, they usually mean deuterocanonical books, the ones I'm about to tell you about. These are good books, authentic books, but are not inspired. If you have a Bible which includes the deuterocanon, it will have these books: Tobit, Judith, Baruch, Sirach, 1st and 2nd Maccabees, Wisdom of Solomon, and then additions. These are additions to the book of Esther, to the book of Daniel, and the book of Jeremiah, the ones that Athanasius mentioned. Now, those Greek additions, did Athanasius mean to include them in his list? Probably, because he does mention the Greek additions to Jeremiah, that being Baruch in the epistle. So did he include those verses that are in the Septuagint from Esther and Daniel? Probably. We can't know for sure. I guess we could know for sure, but I don't know the answer to that. But the other books, Tobit, Judith, Baruch, Sirach, and 1st and 2nd Maccabees, and Wisdom, are books that we typically include in the deuterocanon. And to review, these books do not appear in the Hebrew Old Testament. They don't appear in any Hebrew Old Testament. They only appear in the Greek Old Testament and the church always understood that these were authentic but not canonical. They're good to read, they give us context, but they are not inspired scripture. The second category, we have the deuterocanonical books, which we just mentioned. The second category of good books is the apostolic fathers. Athanasius mentions two of these. He mentions the Didache and the Shepherd of Hermas. There are a few others. 1st and 2nd Barnabas, 1st and 2nd Clement, Polycarp, the letters of Ignatius. These are historical books written after the New Testament period. They are not canonical, but they are authentic, and they are good to read. They give us insight into the early church. Some of these books were included in some Bibles, as we talked about in the main lesson, but through the process of determining the canon, they were removed. So, the deuterocanonical books, those are the additions that are contained in the Greek New Testament, and the apostolic fathers, those writings written in Greek after the closing of the canon by the early church fathers. These books are good to read, they're authentic, but they are not inspired, and as we talked about in the main lesson, nobody thought they were inspired. Everybody knew that they were not scripture. Lastly, we move to the categories of books which are forgeries. As both Eusebius and Athanasius describe as the forgeries of heretics. Eusebius of Caesarea says this in the Ecclesiastical History, Book 3, Section 25, that these are the forgeries of heretics. Athanasius, as I just read, did not mince words either. He said they are assigned a false name, they are assigned a false date in order to deceive, he says, simple men. The pseudepigrapha were nowhere considered as scripture. The early church knew that they were fake. They knew that they were heretical. Nowhere does anyone say that they were helpful to the church. Some of these books are the Gospel of Thomas, which is a horrible book. It is misogynistic. It says, among other things, that the only way that women can be saved is if they become men. It is not a book that should be lauded by anyone, but it is sometimes given as proof of alternate Christianities in the early church. There's also the Gospel of Jude, which was recently brought forth as a potential alternative Christianity, is also very late, later than the Gospel of Thomas, and is considered a forgery. These pseudepigrapha, there are other pseudepigrapha, there's Acts of Paul, there's Gospels, different letters that are fake. These were all written much later than the New Testament and the Apostolic Fathers, except for the Gospel of Thomas. Well, it was written after the Apostolic Fathers. The Gospel of Thomas was written in the 4th century. But these were written much later, and as Eusebius points out, in their own style and contents differ greatly from the writings of this Old and New Testament canon. The last category are what we call legends. These are non-historical stories about Jesus. There are some legendary stories about Jesus doing miracles when he was a boy. There's other stories. These aren't based on any facts. They're legends. Do some of these legends build on actual stories about Jesus that were spread orally? It's hard to know. Not even Athanasius mentions these. Eusebius doesn't mention these. We should consider these to be legendary, inauthentic, and not scripture. So, to review and to close, what we commonly call the Apocrypha is broken up into four categories: deuterocanonical books, apostolic fathers, pseudepigrapha, and legends. The first two categories are what we commonly call Apocrypha. but should properly be called deuterocanonical books and apostolic fathers. The deuterocanonical books were always recognized to be good and authentic, but not scripture. The apostolic fathers were always recognized to be good and authentic, but not scripture. But the last two categories were always recognized to be false, to be the forgeries of heretics, to lead people astray. So that's a summary of the Apocrypha and some of the other writings that are surrounding the New Testament and the Old Testament. I hope this summary is helpful to you, and it will help you get a sense of where we should place them in our lives and in the way we think about the Bible.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Please rate and review us on your podcast service and share with anyone who may be interested. The intro and outro music for the New Life podcast is provided by Sandra McCracken with her permission. Please visit her website at sandramccracken.com. We'll see you next week.